Property Tax Division to order. Good morning, Senator Fulby, Senate File 2617. Is Senator Fulby here? Welcome to the committee, Senator Fulby. I just wanted to say that I really appreciate the work that you and Senator Olsen are doing on the Green Acres and other ag property tax issues. I know you guys have put a lot of effort into finding some solutions here, and hopefully these four bills that we have in front of the committee today will move us forward on as we try to find some fairness in this issue. So thanks for your effort, and we'll start. You see, you have a couple of testifiers with you, Mr. Schmiesing and Commissioner Kenzik. Am I right?
Commissioner Schmiesing.
Yep.
To my left, and Mr. Jerry Kreitzik.
Very good.
Sherburne County Assessor.
Well, let's walk us through the bill and tell us what you have in 2617, and then we'll go to your testifiers.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. And I'd really like to welcome Commissioner Schmiesing and Mr. Kreitzik down here today and others from the district for making the trek down in the rain. And this has been, as you all know, quite an ordeal, this agriculture property tax issue and the whole Green Acres issue, especially in my area of the state. You know the history. You've been through that all. I'm just going to say a few words about the bill before you. I'm here today on behalf of Bill, 2617, I believe, is the first one that we're going to discuss. This one we are referring to as the Circuit Breaker Bill. In these past years, a series of events created the perfect storm, as you know, which has put tremendous strain on the farmers and landowners of my area. Several factors, including the Department of Revenue independently changing the way Green Acres property is assessed, limited market value being eliminated in 2010, and general economic trends are driving up the value of farmland and driving down the value of residential property across the state. And those are things you're all well aware of. This perfect storm has created a one-year problem, which requires a one-year fix for a number of agriculture owners. This bill creates that one-year fix. Recent increases in property taxes, whether on residential or productive farmland, are putting Minnesota families and farmers at risk. Property taxes are an unrelenting regressive tax, which has no regard for whether you have a job or whether your farmland is more or less productive. And being sensitive to our time and deadlines and things, we don't have a lot of testimony planned because I know that you are, as I said, all aware of this issue. So I'd just like to explain the bill briefly. The bill before you, Senate File Number 2617, creates a farmland refund similar to the special refund for homesteads. The refund is available if gross property taxes on Class 2A farmland increase more than 25% and more than $250 in payable 2010 compared to 2009. The refund is 60% of the excess over the eligible threshold, the maximum refund being $1,000. The property must be in agriculture in both years. Obviously, the question is how are we going to pay for this? So the first part of the bill in Section 1, I kind of went backwards. I went with Section 2. How I'm proposing we pay for this is that we modify the renter property tax refund program for 1 year by changing the percentage of rent constituting property taxes used to calculate that fund refund. For rent paid in 2010 only, the percentage would change from 19% to 18%. And as, again, you are well aware, Mr. Chair and members, that this is something that has been used before in history for a few things. In fact, as recently as last year, it was used one time with Governor Pawlenty's unallotment moving that to a 15% reduction, and with that 1%, I do have figures in my notes somewhere, this circuit breaker bill would affect potentially 62,000 ag owners parcels, and the renter's credit would affect 2,800 renters. So that gives you a little idea of some numbers and people, puts people on these numbers. So with that, I will yield to my testifiers, and they will share just a few words.
Welcome.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members.
State your name for the record, please.
Oh, sorry. My name is Gerald E. Kritzik, and I'm the Sherburne County Assessor. And in support of Bill 2617, Circuit Breaker, I can testify to the fact that values between 2009 and 2010 for green acres have gone up 33 1/3%, resulting in taxes, green acre taxes, increasing from 2009 to 2010 between 30 and 40%, and in some cases between 40 and 50%. So a bill such as you're considering today would benefit a great number of farmers in Sherburne County, with the threshold being a 25% increase, a minimum dollar figure of $250. I feel it would be a great benefit to the Sherburne County taxpayers that are in the Green Acre program.
Mr. Kritzik, you talked about the green acres value, and that would be a result of the formula. What has the ag values done overall in your county this last year?
The green acre ag value in Sherburne County is $3,000 per acre for tillable property in the green acres program.
And what's the highest and best use value?
In 2009, it was approximately $6,000. In 2010, it's approximately $5,000.
It's about $5,000 now?
In 2010, that's correct.
Okay. Thank you. Any other questions, members? Senator Dibble.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. I just appreciate what you're doing, Senator Phoebe. As you can well imagine, I'm concerned about the source. You cited, of course, the unallotment. I don't think that's that we can take that as a precedent or even a positive precursor. I think for that very reason, we should be careful about trying to take more money out of the pockets of renters. I have a lot of renters in my district, a lot of renters in the core cities, and these are the folks right now during these economic circumstances that are having a tremendous amount of difficulty themselves. So I don't know why we would, you know, hit up one extremely stressed, and frankly some folks are being pushed way to the margins of economic viability to support another. I support what you're trying to do, but you know, I think going to this source is troubling for me to support. You talked about 2,800 renters. Those are the folks who would no longer be eligible for a refund, but every renter would receive a reduction in their refund. And that's significant. And, you know, I don't think it would be acceptable for me to look to rural Minnesota to appropriate money and take money out of the pockets of folks in rural Minnesota to bring it directly into the pockets of people in my district. I would be run out of this room if I tried to suggest something like that. So, you know, I think we need to keep discussing how to solve your problem without putting more stress on people who are under tremendous, tremendous stress right now in this economic time.
And Senator Dibble, yes, you make a good point. And they did get nicked in the unallotment. And I think as we go through the reductions that the tax committee is going to have to deal with this year, we're going to try to look to bring some fairness to these cuts. And you do make a good point. They have already experienced considerable cuts in that area due to the unallotments.
About $50 million was directly taken from people who rent in this last year. It's a lot of stress. Those are a lot of family budgets. People count on that money.
And so, if Senator Phoebe, I think if we're the policy is going to be discussed, if we are going to move forward with that, the tax committee will probably look and see if there aren't some other funding mechanisms that we might be able to use. It is a hard year for that, of course, but you know, if we, when we have this policy discussion, we'll certainly see what we can do there. And do you have County Commissioner, Senator Fulby?
Yes. Mr. Chair and Senator Dibble, thanks for your comments, and that was definitely a sensitivity, and I have some other notes on that that I didn't share in my introduction. Currently, the department is suggesting a decrease in that renter's credit. They are requesting or suggesting that we do drop it down to 15%. So I definitely talked with them at the time, and that was part of this discussion. And I know that's the tough part of this bill for some people. The department saying 19% has been too high due to fallen property taxes for rental properties, and they recommended 15%. So that was in part of my discussions, and don't want to give the impression at all that this is an easy fix, but one that I think warrants some consideration.
Senator Dibble.
Yes, Mr. Chair, I'm aware that it's been Governor Pawlenty's wish to attack this refund program for many years now. We've to date successfully fought that off. He got his own way when he acted unilaterally, some say unconstitutionally, during the interim. You know, we've successfully battled that back for the time being. It's a battle that we will continue to fight for the reasons that I stated earlier. And I appreciate your sensitivity, and I hear that, you know, to this issue. But, yeah, we're well aware of the recommendations of the department, and
right.
It's been politically a very intense struggle over the last few years to protect the interests of folks who are at the margins, who are under difficult circumstances.
And Mr. Chair and Senator,
Senator Fulby.
Absolutely, I'm willing to look at that more, and obviously you all have a larger pocket of history than I do, and I appreciate that, and just want you to know definitely I'm sensitive to that, so I appreciate your comments. Commissioner Schmiesing?
Commissioner Schmiesing, welcome to the committee.
Thank you. I'll be brief. Commissioner?
We need you to say your name for the record.
Felix Schmiesing. So,
thank you.
Senator Fulby is absolutely right. This is a result of more or less a perfect storm of falling residential values, increasing ag values, and it's all kind of sprung onto our agricultural community in 1 year's time. And we need a bridge to get these folks through it. I have sat with farmers and looked at the changes in their tax bills, and their tax bills have gone up significantly. In many cases, the amount of money that they take out for family living out of their farm will be eaten up by increases in taxes, in their real estate taxes. So, you know, they're businessmen, they're good businessmen. They'll plan for this and they'll work their way through it. But we cannot shock them all in 1 year and put them in a position that the viability of their farms may be threatened. So this would act as a bridge. I certainly would appreciate your consideration, and I'd like to thank Senator Fulby for bringing this forward.
And thank you, Commissioner. You know, additionally, the limited market value was removed. 43% of the value in the state that was limited was ag land. We tried to minimize that sum by reducing the rate from 0.55 to 0.5. But as you look on our agenda today, there are initiatives to take a further bite at that apple. I think as a committee we're going to look and see if we think that this is a long-term problem or if it truly is a one-year issue that we're dealing with. If it's a long-term problem, we might try to look at some longer-term solutions. But you know, we have other bills on the agenda today that are addressing some of those issues, so we're going to try to balance this out. But thanks for your comments. Should we move to Mr. Questions, members? Mr. Peterson and Mr. Raddatz, Senator Fulby, they're on my list.
Yes, actually, Mr. Peterson, I believe, has not made it yet, but okay. Mr. Raddatz will be here to speak on behalf of them.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Good morning. Yes, Mr. Peterson sent me an email and said he was not feeling the best today, so wasn't sure if he'd be here or not, maybe late. I'm not speaking for him, but we worked
your name,
with
Chris.
Chris Raddatz, Director of Public Policy for Minnesota Farm Bureau. We've worked with the Farmers Union in the last year, 2 years on the Green Acres issue, quite similar positions and concerns about it. And we certainly appreciate Senator Fobey's effort here to try and, as was mentioned, develop some kind of a bridge, realizing the funding source is something that needs to be looked at. And if I could draw the committee's attention in your packet, you should have a sheet like this, which is from House Research. It says statewide on the top. And this is a summary of property tax changes comparing 2009 to 2010. So it's based on the current year. And if you look at it down towards the bottom, you'll see ag land homesteaded. The percent change in taxable market value again statewide increased by 18% on homestead. Non-homestead, it went up 38%. Then shifting over to the net tax, the ag homestead went up 15% and non-homestead 30%, and that's compared to about a 2% increase for total taxes. And the market value statewide went up less than 1%, and that's where you see the big increases for the farm. And if I might, Mr. Chairman, rather than call everybody up here, we have a lot of farmers in the audience. We have a event at the Capitol today, and I'd just like a show of hands from the people in the audience, how many of their taxes went up at least 100%? Over 100%? So you can see it's had some significant impact, and as you mentioned, the net market or the limited market value is a large driver of that. But we hope we'll work with the committee, and hopefully we can come up with some funding source that works so we can have this bridge to get us over this hump this year. So thank you and encourage your support.
Thank you, Mr. Raddatz, and welcome to all the farmers from the state. Some of you traveled quite a ways to get here today to the committee. It's always good to see some of my friends and colleagues in my industry down here in St. Paul. So welcome to the Capitol. Senator Dibble.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. Why such a huge jump? I mean, I understand the dynamic of lifting the limited market value, but why such a dramatic jump in 1 year? That's just incredible.
I think Senator Dibble, as Senator Fobey said, there was kind of three things that happened. One was the decline in home values, and the ag land stayed relatively flat, so mm-hmm. that was a shift. And then there was the limited market value coming off,
right.
Which, that was a protection that had been afforded for these fast-rising values that went away. So it was a combination. And what was the third thing, Senator Fobey? My mind isn't coming back to me right now. But there were three things that really played a role in here. And
excuse
it all
me,
compounded.
Mr. Chair, just the reduction in residential values and the ag land values changing. And, Mr. Chair and Senator Dibble, I think that chart that Mr. Raddatz provided this morning is just a great visual and thing that is so stark at showing you how our agriculture landowners have been affected in the last year and the outcry, especially in my district, in Senator Olsen's district, is just amazing and really difficult to, I mean, the assessors hear it every day, and I think Senator Olsen and I also hear it every day, and they have been dramatically affected to a point of many farmers are saying, does Minnesota really value ag property anymore? And that's been real sad for me to see in the area that I live. So I really appreciate that. That came to my attention just yesterday. We're finding more and more numbers and details, and it creates this absolute dramatic picture of how dramatically ag landowners have been affected in the last year, and I just really encourage the committee's sensitivity to that.
Mr. Chairman, if I could, and
sure,
Senator Dibble.
Mr. Raddatz.
I think I'm correct, but basically when you're looking at assessed values, it's like a two-year process. So the assessed values in 2010, really that whole process started based on 20, 2008 values. I believe I'm correct or close to it. And if you look back at the farm economy, I know it's hard to realize when you look at what residential markets and commercial markets have done, but if you look back to 2008, that's when we saw record prices for corn, soybeans, just record prices, which really kind of drove up land prices. The Green Acres base value change was mentioned. Well, that's based on the five counties in southwest Minnesota, and those values went up about 30%. And I think that's a reflection that the farm economy was in pretty good shape in 08. Now, if you fast forward to 2010, things have changed. I mean, input costs are sky high, costs probably several hundred dollars an acre to put a crop in. So it's kind of a reflection back in time.
So it's a
Senator Dibble.
Convergence of a number of factors that have kind of come to, yeah, to roost. I see here, too, I was looking up one line at the minus six in the house parcel, the home parcels, which is, I think, the largest decline of all the other classes.
And all of these things, they compound upon one another. It's not just a simple addition. It's a compounding. So it's a pretty big problem, and we're going to take a look at it best we can. Anybody else, Senator Fobey, did you have?
Not for this one, Mr. Chair. I have Jeannie Henderson here and also John Cullen behind me, also assessors from Sherburne County, and just want to say that the assessors in my whole district have been amazing, but especially Sherburne County. They have worked so incredibly hard to understand this, which has been very complex for assessors' offices, as you'll hear a little bit in my next bill. And Sherburne County, I think, has just done a remarkable job, and I appreciate all their work.
And Ms. Madden wanted to testify. Is she here?
Thank you.
Just the first one.
Couple spots, I guess.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. My name is Nan Madden. I'm director of the Minnesota Budget Project. We are an initiative of the Minnesota Council of Nonprofits that provides independent research, analysis, and advocacy on budget and tax issues. We appreciate this opportunity to talk to the committee a little bit more about the renter's credit. We are not speaking to the underlying ag concerns, which I know you'll need to be thinking about and addressing, but just wanted to follow up on some of the discussion that has happened already about the concern about the funding source in this bill. The renter's credit provides a reduction in property taxes for over 300,000 low and moderate income Minnesota households from all parts of the state whose property taxes are high in relation to their income. More than 80% of recipients have household incomes of $30,000 or less. 28% of households receiving the renter's credit include seniors or people with severe disabilities. That percentage of recipients who are seniors or people with disabilities tends to be higher in greater Minnesota. And in fact, there's 12 counties in greater Minnesota where at least half of the recipients are seniors or people with severe disabilities, so folks on limited incomes. We're also concerned about the impact of cuts to the renter's credit in our local communities. We know that these are dollars that these struggling families use to pay for basic needs in their local communities and have a multiplier effect there. When we look at the renter's credit, I think the crucial question is it effective in meeting its goal, which is reducing the regressivity of the state's property tax system? Rental property taxes are among the most regressive taxes in Minnesota, even after we take into account the renter's credit. So we'd like to thank Senator Scoy, Senator Dibble, for your words already on this issue. We know this committee has been very strong in rejecting past proposals to the renter's credit, and hope that you will continue to do so as you think both specifically about this issue, but as you put together your omnibus tax bill this year. And I did also bring a handout for the committee that demonstrates the importance of the renter's credit all across the state.
Thank you. Thank you, Ms. Madden.
Mr. Chair, my name is Michael Dahl, and I'm the Public Policy Director with Homeline. We are an organization that helps low-income tenants with issues that they're facing to maintain their homes or in disputes with their landlords. For a number of years, Governor Pawlenty has gone after the renter's credit and proposed cuts to it, and so we've had a lot of years to tell renters what's being proposed and ask them how do they use the renter's credit. I appreciate the issue that Senator Fobey has brought up and hope that that's something that can be addressed, but I just want to share that this is a credit that goes to Minnesotans across the state, and we've heard from hundreds of people that I'd be happy to share the stories with you. I want to point out that four letters that we received from constituents came from Senator Fobey's district, and I want to give a sense of what people tell us they use this money for. Muriel,
briefly, please.
Yes, just a couple of lines each. Muriel from District 16 says, I'm 84 years old and I live in an apartment in Big Lake. I need the renter's credit to pay for groceries, insurance payments, and phone bills. I'm on a fixed income and I don't get any other help. I don't have a car to get around, so please help the elderly. Thank you. We have hundreds of stories like these that we'd be happy to share with the committee about how across the state this is a very necessary tax credit for low-income Minnesotans. Thank you.
Thank you. And you know, we'll take your testimony certainly into consideration. I think we've already mentioned that we would try to see if there wasn't some under the funding. And Senator Fobey, as I said earlier, I think one of the things we need to think about as we go through this is this really truly a one-year issue, or is this a longer-term problem, and should we be looking at some longer-term reductions for ag property taxes? And I'm sure that you'll be involved in that discussion and as we move forward. Anyone else that wants to testify? Questions, members? Seeing no one.
Chair.
Oh, Senator Ortman, I'm sorry.
Chair, just a comment. I have visited with many of the folks in my community recently with what's happening with their renter's credit, and I'm also very concerned about that. It seems like we have encouraged, Mr. Chair, a reliance on those funds, a dependence on the part of those folks. They're paying for their glasses or they're paying for their car repairs, and it seems, again, like there's a policy problem that we have, a tax policy problem where we're encouraging people to rely on those funds, a credit, for their basic necessities. And so it seems, again, like a really key area for this tax committee to start to look at what are we doing with this. I mean, I wrote a letter to the governor saying I did not support what was happening with the renter's credit, but there seems to be a fundamental problem in the system where our tax credits are being used for basic necessities. It's just a problem. And Senator Fobey, I appreciate your efforts on your bill as well. I'm just not sure about how well they fit together here.
Senator Dibble.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. And if we go down this path, I hope
Let me tell Senator Dibble and Senator Ortman, we are going to have the opportunity in full division committee to have this debate about the renter's credit. I think both of you know that as we look at reductions in the tax committee, this will be part of our discussion. Senator Dibble.
I hope we're then also mindful of the mortgage interest tax deduction and the property tax deductions and, you know, those sorts of credits and deductions that we offer up to people in the spectrum of housing.
Okay. Anything
Mr.
else?
Chair and members, just
Senator Fobey.
This is a much larger discussion in ag property and all of those issues need to be part of that discussion also, because those people have been, as you see from the chart that Mr. Raddatz passed out in the last years, have been so adversely affected financially. So,
Chair lays over Senate File 2617 for possible inclusion. Thank you very much. Senator Fobey, Senate File 2645.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And members, I'm going to invite Jeannie and John to the table. I don't know. I actually haven't seen the agenda, so I don't know if they're on there.
They are not.
Okay, I'll introduce them. And just they drove down from the district, so I want them to join us here. Thank you. Mr. Chair, members, I'm here with this bill. This is Senate File 2745, also having to do with the agriculture property owner issue and especially the Green Acres issue. In the decisions that were made in the last few years, there's just some slight changes that I'd like to recommend. with this bill. And if you look down on line 1.22, I'm asking for an extension in the deadline that people need to make decisions with regard to their property for a number of different reasons. May 1st is, as you know, right around the corner. As you've heard prior to today and just this morning now, what a large change this was for so many number of agriculture owners. We need more time. As early as or as late as yesterday, I also heard that counties still don't have all the information they need to be making these decisions. Assessor's offices don't have Sherburne County has they're really on board, but some of our counties are believing that property owners are going to need to be hiring surveyors to do new legal covenants. I heard that as yesterday. I don't know that that's true. I don't think it's true. But my point with it is that counties and assessor's offices are still really confused about this perfect storm that has happened over the last year. And May 1st is unrealistic for assessors, for landowners, for all those involved, for us to expect them to get this all in order. So with the department, with the assessor's office, with the counties, we've come up with the date of August 16th to ask for a slight extension there. And then on the back, obviously the effective date is changed. With that, I think I would like Ms. Jeannie Henderson just to make a few comments with regard to the date change.
Ms. Hendrickson?
Good morning. My name is Jeannie Henderson.
Welcome to the committee.
Thank you. I work in the Sherburne County Assessor's Office, and I work mainly with agricultural property. So I deal with all of our farmers in Sherburne. And the changes that are being made have been made per statute to the Green Acres has been largely felt in our county. And I know a lot of our property owners are trying to make decisions going in, removing their Green Acres. And in dealing with them and talking with them, it's a complicated issue. And even though I may spend many hours with some of the property owners, they still walk away with more questions. And I think that a delay in them having to make that decision would be a very good decision for these property owners. Thank you.
Thank you.
My name is John Cullen. I'm with the Sherburne County Assessor's Office, and I'm the Chief Deputy Assessor. And basically, for the last few years, I've been involved with the changes in the ag classifications and the values. And what I've seen is the hearts of the farmers that I've dealt with pretty much on a daily basis, confusion on just what they should be doing in making those choices, which I believe are good choices. The forest management program and the rural preserve is a good program. And in my opinion, I would certainly like to see there be some changes in the covenants, maybe ease up on that a bit. That seems to show some confusion. But more than anything, I think it's just been a lot put on these farmers, and we know this time of year they're looking at their budgets, they're trying to figure out what their crops are going to be, and all the economic issues that they're now having to look at, this just makes it much more complicated for them to move forward. Thank you.
Thank you. Senator Fulby, I know Mr. Raddatz is on the list. I wonder if before that, I would Mr. Hagan care to comment on this from the department's perspective?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is John Hagan. I'm Assistant Director with the Property Tax Division in the Department of Revenue, and we support this bill. We think pushing the date back a little bit to give property owners a little more time to make the decision. And a couple things made this more important than we thought it was initially when we set the date originally at May 1st. One problem is assessors, the information, giving information to property owners is kind of a high-level decision-making function. where a lot of assessors tell me they only want the assessor, that maybe the deputy assessor, advising property owners and getting them the information on to make certain they're all speaking, each office speaks with one voice. A problem that assessors encounter is the local boards of appeal and equalization occur in April and May. So some of them in Otter Tail County, for instance, has 87 different local boards in that two-month span. So they're running pretty ragged trying to deal with the local boards of appeal and equalization, which doesn't give them really sufficient time to get the information out. As important as the information is to get out, as Senator Folby mentioned, there's a lot of misinformation circulating, and we're trying to address that and deal with that. But a lot of times the misinformation creates more problems for the assessors and for legislators in the Department of Revenue than the actual information. So we're supportive of pushing the date back to August 15th, and I really don't see a downside to it.
And Mr. Hagan, you think that this will help us as we try to get the accurate information out and try to tamp some of the misinformation down, and maybe help us with the Board of Soil Water Resources as we work with them to get the Soil Water Conservation Districts on board, and so we keep these plans kind of simple and streamlined and not real expensive, and maybe this additional time will help us in that effort.
Mr. Chairman, that is certainly my hope, and I certainly hope that will be true.
Thank you. Mr. Raddatz.
Mr. Chairman, Chris Raddatz, Farm Bureau. Just very briefly, I'd like to get it on the record that Farm Bureau and Farmers Union do support this bill. One of the things we're seeking is clarity, and if I might, Mr. Chair, I made some remarks earlier about the cost of production, and my friends in the back of the room reminded me that it's literally about $100 an acre just for seed for corn, and total costs to put in a crop for an acre of corn can easily be $400 to $500 an acre. So thank you, and again, this is really important. It would really help landowners to give us that extra time. And the sooner we can get that information out, the better.
Well, and to that point, and this is the Property Tax Committee, not the ag, but when you start thinking about the ag inputs that these people are putting in, a lot of times it's a significant percentage of the value of the land that they're risking because of all the uncertainties with weather and markets, et cetera. So we're going to be particularly sensitive to this issue.
Thank you.
Anything else, Senator Folby, on this?
Mr. Chair and members, I think that concludes my statements.
Okay. Questions, members? Anybody else wish to testify in opposition to this bill? Or anybody wish to testify? Thank you. Chair lays Senate File 2745 over for possible inclusion. And thank you very much, Senator Folby, and we'll look forward to working with you on both of these issues as this bill moves to full committee and then to the floor. So thank you very
thank
much.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Senator Olsen.
Morning, Mr. Chair and members.
Welcome, Senator Olsen. Senate File 2731.
Mr. Chair and members, I think it would be fair to say an accurate statement that I've spoken to thousands of people about green acres in the last 2 years. And there's been some adjustments and improvements. And my goal is that we make another adjustment and we don't talk about this thing for 20 years. That's my goal.
Senator Olsen, that was my goal a year ago.
having said that, I do have the A1 amendment that would put this bill in the form I would prefer.
This is your first stop. Senator Dibble moves the A1 amendment. Any discussion? All those in favor say aye. Opposed, same sign. Motion prevails. Amendment's adopted.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And to the amendment.
Senator Olsen, this is a delete all amendment, so we'll be working off of that now.
The biggest changes, Mr. Chair and members, is that you've heard previous testimony about the five-county base in southwestern Minnesota with Rock, Nobles, down by Worthington. And we've met with the Department of Revenue and verifiable land sales of $5,300 an acre for purely agricultural use. So that's the base, and then each county has a multiplier of that base. And in Chisago and Isani County in my district, there's really not a green acres value anymore because the base is so high with the multiplier for the county that there's no value for the green acres property. So what this bill does is we look at going away from the five-county base and then working with the University of Minnesota, and using some numbers from the National Agricultural Statistics Service, we develop a production number for each county that uses rent and production levels and input and all of those kinds of factors that affect each county possibly differently than another county or another part of the state. And what I believe this will do, it will really make the number that determines Green Acres value a better realistic number for each county that the Green Acres evaluation is being established. The second part of the bill is kind of a dramatic change to the rural preserve, and that eliminates the 10-year covenant. Just a week ago Tuesday, we had a big meeting in Cambridge at the community college and probably 250 people there. And they were, I think the youngest farmer who is actually here to testify is probably 44 years old. A lot of folks were probably averaging over 60 years old, and they just felt in their life they could not make a commitment for 10 years. They didn't know what was going to happen in the next 10 years in their life, and they didn't want a rural preserve portion of land on their farm to be committed to 10 years. So we're striking the language. This bill deletes the language of the 10-year covenant, and it still requires that there be a conservation plan developed. So basically then Green Acres will be a production ag tax incentive, and the rural preserve will be an incentive for people to maintain their property in a rural natural state. We had a lot of testimony that, you know, the farm is the farm and we shouldn't break it up, but I believe that we're not going to go down that road, so I think that this is the best solution, is that Green Acres will be productive land, and then we'll also give them a similar tax incentive for people to preserve their rural lands, woods, wetlands, but they do have to do that conservation plan. So with that, Mr. Chair, if there's any questions, I also have some testifiers.
Yeah, well, Senator Olstein, let's bring your testifiers up and get through their testimony. I've got six people on my list, so I don't know who you want to start with.
Well, let's start with Mr. Raddatz.
Sure. Mr. Chairman, Chris Raddatz again with Minnesota Farm Bureau. I'll be very brief here that we support Senator Olstein's bill, especially the provision where you look at other factors just then the increase in the land values. As we've talked before, take into account production, input costs, and those kind of things as you're looking at that value of the ag land. And we believe his bill will add some more kind of criteria, things to look at to arrive at a more accurate value of ag land. So we would support the bill.
And Mr. Raddatz, do you have a thought on the change with regard to the rural preserve time period?
Mr. Chairman, to be real honest with you, that decision to place a covenant on the land, I think landowners won't go in the program because of that provision. They are very concerned about it. And I'm hearing from more folks that they don't want to participate in it because of that provision. So, yes, I think that is something that should be looked at. I know it would help a lot of landowners as they're making that decision. It is a concern for them.
Okay. Thank you. And Mr. Drood? I don't know who you have with you.
Mr. Chair, I think we'll start with Craig Moline and Glenn Holmstrom.
Mr. Moline.
Good morning. Thank you, committee. My name is Craig Moline. I am a farmer in Chisago County in the North Branch area. And the way this Green Acres deal has come about is affecting us very greatly in our area. We're not vastly communicated with those five counties in southwestern Minnesota. Our land values are totally different than those counties. Our wasteland is much more valuable to us, so that creates a higher tax burden if we're taxed the same way. So those five counties are separately yield-wise different than we are in East Central Minnesota. Our woods are of value to us, and we will be taxed at a different rate if we can't find a production for that and put that in the rural preserve program. So I would sooner not have to put that in a rural preserve program and tie it up for 10 years and then say it's non-productive land. It is productive land. Timber is a productive resource of agricultural product. By doing this, it would enable me to not do what I would like to do with my land. So the program doesn't fit us entirely in East Central Minnesota as it does in other parts of the state.
Thank you.
And he's one of the younger farmers in our area.
Mr. Holmstrom.
Good morning. Glenn Holmstrom. I also farm in the Chisago and Isani County area, along with my brother and son. My taxes on my farmland went from 60% to 157% higher this year. It's a huge number. And I believe part of the reason was the formula that's being used to derive at the value of the agricultural land in our counties is out of sync with what's really happening. A large portion of our counties, both Isani and Chisago County, are the Anoka sand plains, which is a low productive sandy soil. I talked to the Chisago County assessor, and I asked him what he thought the value of farmland was, ag land, in the county. And the last figures he had would put it at about $2,200 an acre. But right now he's being mandated to come up with about $3,000 an acre. So that, you know, that's part of the reason this thing has gone up as high as it has. And so I would certainly support anything to get that more in line with what the real values are. As far as the rural preserve part goes, I agree with Craig. I have one piece of property I bought from an elderly gentleman 25 years ago that has a lake on it, a third of a mile of lakeshore on it, and I've been paying Green Acres tax on it because I maintain it as a farm, but there's 26 acres of non-tillable land by the lake that's highland oak woods. And I'm told if I don't put it in rural preserve, I'll be taxed at the rate of $278 a foot for the lakeshore, which would make it, I'd have to buy the farm over basically every year on taxes. My other option is to put it in rural preserve or to take down and remove the woods and turn it into field, which is something I'm really looking at doing just because I'd be 68 years old by the time this came out of rural preserve, and I don't know if I want to do that to my kids. I don't know what's going to happen.
Okay, thank you. I mean, I understand what you're saying about the differential between the counties in the Southwest and in your part of the state. I mean, I recognize that there are pretty much crop land and you have more mixed, diverse agriculture. I've always had some concerns because as corn and bean prices go up, it is a negative to cattle, which I don't know what you guys have, but I have always seen that problem. But the department did do an analysis, and I'm going to ask them to come forward at some point and talk a little bit about this, but they did an analysis and developed this ratio, and I think they did work at it the best they could. The other thing I do want to say is this was in place prior to the Green Acres law changes. So this valuation discussion that we're having was going to take place whether there would have been any changes in Green Acres or not, and prior to the rural preserve and everything. So just for the audience and for the gentleman, I understand your concerns there, and, you know, we are going to work with the department and see what we can do to make their formula more reflective of what's actually going on in the land, but this part of the Green Acres program was going to occur whether we had done any other changes or not.
I think Senator Scoy, I think we agree on that as well. I think we're not, what we're after is a fair valuation on our land. You know, we have to come up with a certain gross figure to make that net work. And what we're looking at is to try to have a different valuation on our land because you come up with this state average. And our state average doesn't apply to us. It costs us a lot of inputs to grow in our area. If that was the case, there's farmers in our area that are buying land in southern Minnesota. Southern Minnesota farmers aren't buying our land. Recent sales in our area are $1,000 an acre, and that's registered at our courthouse last September. That's buildings, everything. Yeah. So you come up with a state average. It might average a lot in certain parts of the state, but our corridor is a much different area for us to produce that product. And I'm just like Mr. Holmstrom said, I'm going to be forced to take land out of the woods. The soil and water doesn't like that. We're here to preserve the land, manage the woods, manage the wetlands. And there are many people in our area that have many parcels. And if we go to soil and water and say, it's going to cost me $500 for each plan on each different parcel I own, there was a gentleman in that audience that said, well, it's going to cost me $6,000 just to get this changed over to go in land preserve. And I don't know how soil and water is going to handle every case there is besides. So it's not just us. It's affecting the soil. It's affecting the land. It's affecting our area. Once in a while, we will have a good land deal as urban sprawl does hit us, but right now that isn't the case. We farm in that area to farm. We don't farm in that area to sell houses. We farm because that's what we love to do. And all the gentlemen behind us do that as well. We're here to preserve as much as we possibly can at a cost to raise our family.
And if there are sales that are at $1,000 an acre, they will be reflected in future values because that's part of what the assessors are required to do. So that should bring down your overall valuation as it moves forward. And I don't know if that's across the state. That's not what I've been hearing. I've heard that AGLADs have kind of flattened out. I haven't heard about those kind of declines, but that'll be a benefit to you.
Right, and I understand that, Senator Scoy, but the thing is that when you throw everything in a state average, that doesn't apply to everybody. You know, it's no different than taxing us outside of the urban area versus inside. It's not fair to put everybody in the same pool sometimes, and that's the way it is in agriculture. There's definite difference in that.
Right. Senator Artman.
Mr. Chair, my question is for the second testifier. You said that your property was valued by the assessor at, or the fair market value was $2,200 per square or per acre, and you said there was a mandate for $3,000 per acre, and I'm trying to understand, was that at a county assessor level, or do you think that that's the formula at the state level that's demanded?
The formula
that
Mr. Holmquist?
Holmstrom, yeah.
Holmstrom.
Okay. The formula that's used bases the property, as I understand it, off of the five counties in southwestern Minnesota that have no outside influence other than agriculture to determine a value, and then they use a multiplier. And it happens to be that Chisago County's multiplier is 75% of the value of them farms down southwestern Minnesota, and that works out to about $3,000 an acre. That's what the assessor has to value the land at for Green Acres program. But he has stated to me that with the sales he's seen, his most recent sales, it was more in the line of $2,200 an acre.
Senator Artman, the issue is the value for Green Acres taxation is, you know, the assessor was stated it could have been at $2,200, where according to the formula that the department developed, it states it should be at $3,000. And that's part of what this bill is trying to get at, to bring some more accuracy to the formula.
Right. Senator Arnold. So, Mr. Chair, we're talking about no longer doing that on a regional basis, but on a countywide basis with the input from the University of Minnesota. That's what you're suggesting, Senator Olstein.
Mr. Chair, Senator Ortman, that's correct.
Senator
and then
Olstein.
It breaks it down even more into some soil conditions within the county. So I believe it's a much fairer evaluation of the Green Acres value on a per-county basis.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. And do you have...
Mr. Chair, I have two more testifiers, if I may. Ron Drood and Frank Namia. I think I got his name wrong.
And then, Mr. Raddatz, did you want to testify in this bill also?
He already did.
He already did? Oh, I'm sorry. Okay.
Losing Gave her
track.
The thumbs up.
Okay.
Mr. Chair, this is Mr. Ron Drood.
Chairman Scoy, committee, good morning. For the record, my name is Ron Drood. I live and farm in North Branch Township of Isani County and have for 40 years. I'd like to speak in favor with one caveat to this methodology of evaluation that's implicit in this bill. And the value of this, it gets away. I would, by the way, direct your attention to this aerial photograph, which you should have. I'll be referring to it ultimately. This is 1 square mile of land that contains part of our farm, and I'll be referring to these examples one and two in a minute. We've got to get away from this one-size-fits-all kind of thinking about evaluation. It simply isn't fair, and it isn't realistic. I have seven different soil types on the 200 acres that we own, and one of them is peat, and these are two examples of it that are labeled one and two on this aerial photograph. These are peat meadows that we hay. We hay them at a frequency of about once every 4 years when they're dry enough to hay. We were fortunate enough to hay them last year, 2009. A neighbor hayed them at what we call stumpage. That's what we're paid. The fee for haying the land is based on the amount of hay they get. In this case, it was $7 a bale for 1,500-pound bales. We got 55 bales off of the land. I got $400 for this. This breaks down to about $100 a year for these 11 acres, which breaks down farther to about $8 an acre. This land cannot be used for anything else. It's peat. Hopefully you understand what peat is. It's organic soil rather than mineral soil. You can't build anything on it. It can never be used for anything other than what we're using it for now because we're constrained by drainage laws and other legal constraints. This is just one example of 11 acres out of this 40 that needs special attention. And this idea that you can do a one-size-fits-all value simply won't work. The caveat here is you have placed enormous burdens on assessors statewide. I'm familiar with a number of them, and they've all had a lot of things to say about the work that's been laid on them because of these changes. I do not think that they are up to doing this on a basis that's implicit in this bill. They're going to need help. But with that, I'd be happy to take any questions.
Thank you, Mr. Drood. And let's have your other testifier first. Go ahead.
Yes, my name is Frank Namini, and I own 66 acres in Stanchfield, Minnesota, which is in Isani County. I've been farming for about 15 years. I retired and decided to go into farming. I took land. Part of it used to be hayfield. I'm renovating it to bring it back into that. My big concern is this concept that the legislature has that there's non-productive land. I treat my entire 66 acres as productive. For example, I just logged approximately 200 trees as a select cut. And in my mind, I consider that a crop because not only can it be used for lumber, but it can also be used for fuel, very similar and very much the same as corn, which is a crop. It's organic. It comes out of the soil. Anybody that's innovative can find ways to make land, regardless of its format, productive. So I personally would like to see the legislature redefine timber as a crop rather than to say it's not a crop. My understanding, it's not treated as such. the other aspect of this is I do raise beef cattle. I have low ground with grass that's called sedan grass that cattle thrive very good on. The timber creates a shelter for the cattle. So in that sense, it is also productive. My property naturally grows a herb called ginseng and cinnamon, and I want to look into that. Because of these proposed new mandates that are coming down on green acres, In order to qualify my entire 66 acres as green acres, I am forced to fence it in so that, by definition, my assessor can consider it
pasture.
The other aspect of this thing is that, and this is something that is confusing to me, if I were to allow this land to lapse, which means that eventually the assessor or Santa County would remove the what you call non-productive land, my taxes would go into a zoning called R, which is residential. My taxes would go up 300%. What's interesting about that is that we have zoning laws out there that state you can only build one site per 40 acres in the metropolitan area. That's not the same case, and it's the same kind of classification. So there, I consider that a disparity. That's all I have to say.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Anybody? Senator Olsen.
Mr. Chair, I appreciate Senator Ortman's question because I realized, and when I did the delete all, there was language I wanted in the new that addressed that very concern of the soils. And on the first version, it's on 1.23 to 2.2 there. And that, I didn't get that moved over. So I think that's important that that be part of the bill. I'm sorry I missed that. But it says, in determining the relative value of ag-
Senator Olsen, where are you at now?
I'm on the original bill at 1.23 to 2.2. It talks about agricultural lands that the county assessor shall use soil type and soil classification data. And I think that would be important to carry over so that they could break down the county even lower classifications or smaller classifications.
Ms. Off, where would that go in the amendment, the A1 amendment?
Mr. Chairman, that language would be inserted on page 1, line 21 after the period. We would insert that sentence from the original bill, in determining the relative value of agricultural land for each assessment district compared to the county average, the county assessor shall use soil type and soil classification data from detailed and general soil surveys.
Senator Dibble moves that amendment to, which is now 2731. Questions, members? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Motion prevails. Amendments adopted. So that language is included.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Anything else, Senator Dibble?
Thanks, Mr. Chair. Senator Olsen, I understand what you're trying to accomplish in Section 1, but you brought in Section 2 into your delete all amendment, which I'm not, I think I respond to as favorably. I think what essentially happens there then is that we don't use the term unproductive anymore. I think we banished that term last year because we grew to understand as we grappled with this whole issue that there is no such thing as unproductive. And in fact, those sorts of parts of farms are productive for a variety or have a higher value for a variety of different reasons, for future development purposes or recreation purposes or maybe the ability to harvest wood fiber, or you know, maybe it supports the larger agricultural efforts, or you know, larger agricultural initiatives going on that farm, and so that's, you know, that's why we developed the concept of the rural preserve and tried to create some parameters, and so the language you're eliminating, it basically eliminates that. You know, it delivers the benefit of keeping the taxes down, but eliminates the commitment to keeping it in that form. And so, I would just respond to Mr. Raddatz. You know, folks aren't going to come in because they have to keep that commitment in exchange for that benefit for 10 years, that's fine. That's their option. They have to pay the corresponding taxes, of course, but it's a voluntary program. And the truth be told, when folks are receiving this benefit in exchange for that larger commitment, there's an impact to all the surrounding property owners in that county or that municipality. So other folks are kind of picking up the freight. We had that discussion with Senator Phoebe earlier about the impact of, when you squeeze the balloon, it comes out in other places and other properties.
Mr. Chair, Senator Dibble.
Senator Olsen.
Thank you. We just heard testimony. These guys all have chainsaws, and they have tractors, and they know how to use them. That's the concern, is if they don't feel in their life they can make a 10-year commitment to that property, but if they cut those trees down and they till it up and then it's green acres because it's farmable land, that's the alternative. And I don't want to push people to that. I think by taking away the 10-year commitment, people will still do the land grudgingly granted, the land conservation plan, and then they will get a very similar to the Green Acres Program benefit with a 3-year payback also at the end. So there is a payback when they take that land out. But as has been told to me many times, that a field of 100 acres, whether it's corn, bean, or cattle, demands much fewer services than 100 acres of homes.
Senator Dibble.
Well, Mr. Chair, Senator Olsen, I think you get the same result by eliminating the 10-year commitment. I mean, that's the issue. People are getting this benefit in exchange for a longer-term commitment. But removing this commitment tells me that, we're just going to cut down the trees or till it up or develop it. So I think you can flip your argument directly around and come out with the same result and come up with the same argument.
Senator Olsen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think the important point with this is that a lot of these, I think the average age for farmers in Minnesota is 59 years old. They don't want to make that 10-year commitment because they don't know if they're going to be farming in 10 years, and if something happens in their life, all of a sudden, because it's a 5-year commitment to get out of the rural preserve also. I think Green Acres as a program has worked well for 40 years, and this would be a mere image of that, only it would have a different goal. The goal of it would be to preserve rural lands and incentivize farmers or landowners to do that.
And I think Senator Dibble and Senator Olsen, I think the policy issue that we're going to discuss here is whether the 10 years is limiting people's sign-up, which is a negative to what we're trying to achieve. And if there's some middle ground that would be more closely reflective of the Green Acres provisions that they were in prior to that. And I think we'll continue to have that discussion this year and see where this all ends up.
Appreciate that, Mr. Chair.
And I would like to bring up Mr. Hagen from the department to comment on this provision, please.
Can I make one more comment?
Mr. Drew, Chairman's one brief going. Comment.
In a couple of weeks, if not sooner, we're going to be hearing about flooding again in those parts of the state that flood, and you're going to be hearing about wetlands again and their value as flood prevention mechanisms. Those two areas that I referred to on my aerial are, in fact, wetland storage areas. They at $8 a year gross revenue, they're a net loss to my wife and I in our farming operation. But they have a tremendous social value as water storage, and so do other wetlands. These wetlands happen to be classified as farmlands because we can hay them. But you're asking people to provide this social service for the greater good of the whole state, and, in fact, it costs us money to do that under these mechanisms. I think you need to address that in some way, somehow. I don't have an answer for that one, but I wish you'd look at it. Thank you very much.
Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Senator Bach and then Senator Hartman.
I mean, kind of to your point, I mean, just my personal place where I live, I have about 2 acres of high ground, maybe an acre and a half, and I have 10 acres of mostly ash swale behind my house that is wet most of the year. But I pay seasonal rec taxes on all of it. I mean, like three times what ag property pays. So, I mean, I think the problem we have is a lot of us are paying to preserve wetlands for a greater good, and some of us are paying a lot of taxes. I mean, much more than an ag property does. And we all benefit from that. Anyway, my point is I don't think your problem is unique to ag property. Around lakes, there's a lot of low land that people pay very high taxes on. And especially in those areas, those wetlands are important, you know, where you got runoff into water. And I just wanted to mention, it's not unique to ag property what you're experiencing.
Thank you, Mr. Drew. Senator Hartman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. About the 10-year commitment, one of the justifications, if you will, for the whole program was that people wanted to make a commitment to farming in the state of Minnesota and to avoid the pressure from the market to sell that property every single year. And by taking out that 10-year provision, that kind of turns the whole premise on its head and says, okay, we want to do this. We want to make this cost-benefit analysis every year. And if the taxes go up, I'm telling you, we're going to sell our property. And that turns it on its head, and it almost becomes a sword to use against the legislature. You better cut our taxes or we're going to sell our property. I think the whole thing was justified by a commitment. We want this way of life. We want to preserve farming in the state of Minnesota. We supported that with this program. You take the 10 years out, and it looks like a whole different world to me.
Thank you, Senator Hartman. Mr. Hagan.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is John Hagan. I'm with the Minnesota Department of Revenue. First of all, with respect to Senator Olstein's bill, we certainly welcome the added language that asks us to confer with the University of Minnesota and consult with them on various production and rent determinations. We are always looking for ways to improve the product of our land valuation system. The way our ag land valuation system has been developed, and certainly many of you have heard us talk about it a lot of times, it was not something that we sought. It was not something that we went out and thought we'd mandate values for the entire state. It was born out of necessity. One of the testifiers said that the goal that the assessor was talking about, the fair ag value of the property, and that's exactly what we're trying to identify, and that's, I think, by law what the assessors are trying to identify is the fair ag value of the property. Now, the problem in doing that is the impossibility of actually making that determination because of all the other economic concerns that are competing for that same land. There's a lot of competition from the recreational people, from residential, commercial, industrial development pressures that are driving up the value of a lot of these lands. And that was a problem that we encountered long before any of the Green Acres changes came into place. Years back, we started to identify this. I remember a meeting with Dr. Taft of the University of Minnesota, who now we're going to be conferring with on a more formalized basis, saying years ago that he didn't think there was any farmland in Minnesota with very, very few exceptions that was not having their value affected by economic conditions from other competing interests. This got particularly bad starting about 2001 when people were taking a lot of the value from their homes and reinvesting it, the equity they found in their homes, reinvesting in recreational land. When the stock market kind of tanked in 2001, a lot of people took money to the stock market, reinvested it in rural lands, recreational lands. They thought it was a better investment, a safer investment, at the same time they could recreate on it. So all these farmlands were going into a lot of competition with the farmers. Now, some people would say that if farmland is sold to a farmer, that's a farm sale, but the reality is maybe 100 years ago that was true, maybe 50 years ago that was true, but right now when a farmer buys land, they have to compete with other farms or other economic conditions. They have to compete with the hunter, the home buyer, the developer, all those things to get that farmland. So the fair agricultural value is exactly what we want. The problem is how elusive it is. We tried a number of things. We formed a committee, and we tried a number of different ways of trying to identify how to come up with a fair ag land value. And we looked at rents. We looked at production. We looked at all manner of things. Finally, what we've hit upon, and the thing that seemed to work the best, is we went back in time to the 1990 to 1996 time frame, and we took all the sales data we could find for agricultural sales, which was agricultural lands of 75% or more tillable lands, and we figured the ratio by county, and we determined that southwestern Minnesota, those five base counties we talk about, was probably the best reflection of two ag markets with ag markets that had no seasonal influence, no residential, no commercial influence, or the very, very least we could find in the state. And we established that as a base county. For those years, from 1990 to 1996, we looked at the relationship. We established ratios for those ag sales, and we established similar ratios for all the other counties in the state for how their sales were performing during that same time period. We came up with a relationship between the base counties and the other counties. For example, Kitson County, for instance, has a ratio of 30%, which means that at the time, based on the sales from 1990 to 1996, it showed that ag land in Kitson County sold for about 30% of what it did in the base counties. And we've tried to keep that relationship constant going forward and prescribe that relationship going forward. So if our data, if you trust the data that the 1990 to 1996 data, which was the oldest we could go back, by the way, the records just didn't exist before that time. So if you make the determination that that was true data, that relationship, in theory, would hold true, that if lands in southwestern Minnesota increased 20%, the lands in Kitson County would increase that factor of the 30% of that 20%. Now, it is a difficult formula to follow. I won't pretend it's not. But at the end of the day, it was the best formula we could find. We had pretty wide acceptance from assessors, and it's worked quite well. It is not, as I heard portrayed, a one-size-fits-all. It's certainly not. We have values that we prescribe to counties based on that relationship with those southwest Minnesota counties. But we do have the expectation that county assessors will range that value. If they have peatlands, lowlands, unproductive lands, or poorly productive lands that are being farmed, that should be at a much, much lower value. Some values will be higher, some will be lower. The value we prescribe is an average, not what all land should be, and that assessor should reflect that. Senator Olsen has a provision where the assessor should be using, he just added an oral amendment where the assessor should use soil types. And I would hope that assessors are all doing that as much as possible, as much as their resources allow them to do that, to make a determination the better land should pay, it's better agricultural land should be paying more than the peat lands or the blow sands, some of those issues. Once we establish these factors, we don't think that they're locked in rock forever, that we should never change those. We're always looking to perfect them. We, again, applaud the Senator Wilson's proposal to involve the University of Minnesota in that. Sometimes maybe as farming techniques change, as conditions change, as the market changes, we will be adjusting those factors. We're working with the assessors on an ongoing basis. If a factor is too high for a particular area, we would make that adjustment and change that. With respect to the rural preserve provision of the law, and that is, we've discussed a policy decision by the legislature if you want to have a covenant or not. The only concern that we have that we'd like to caution you with that, if you should undo the covenant, is basically removing the rural preserve back to the pre-Green Acres days. And the more we thought about it, the more we realized it might be an expansion of rural preserve if the covenant is gone, or some form, and I'm not saying a 10-year covenant is a perfect solution, but if there's not some provision that would involve having the applicant have some skin in the game, for lack of a better way of saying it, we would have a big expansion. One of the things that prevented the huge expansions of Green Acres in the early years, when we saw the woodland values increasing and all the other economic conditions causing values to go up, was the condition that it's very simple to make the ag classification. If you have 10 acres or more in production, you can get the ag classification, which means that if you had a 160-acre farm and 1 acre was a house and garage and you were getting a homestead, and you had 10 tillable acres, the remaining 149 acres could be woodlands, you would qualify for the ag classification on that entire property. If rural preserve, if there's no covenant, people could move into the rural preserve just by getting a conservation plan. They can move into the rural preserve and get the reduced class rate, which would potentially have a big expansion in if there were an ag homestead in the northern part of the state and the central parts of the state. In the past, the thing that prevented that in the old Green Acres law was the requirement that there had to be a primary use of the land to be agricultural to qualify for Green Acres. And I realize this is a work in progress, but I think you'd be some concerns that the expansion might be really great if you could have just a minimum 10 acres to qualify, and then you could enroll it without any primary use or any conditions associated with that.
And so Mr. Hagen, so the concern is you would have parcels that wouldn't be agriculture. They could be anything as long as they're meeting the criteria of the rural preserve, and then they'd be getting the A grade.
Mr. Chair, I may have misspoken, but what I was trying to say was that if you had enough land to qualify as an ag homestead, which is really 10 acres in production, you could have 100 acres, you could have 200, 300 additional acres of woodlands in conjunction with that if it was contiguous to that property, and that would all be considered ag homestead. Once that criteria was met, all the woodlands, except for the 10 acres in production, would qualify for the rural preserve classification.
Okay, thank you. Senator Hartman.
Mr. Chair, a question perhaps for Council. We have so many farms already that are qualified under this program. What would be the application if we took away the 10-year covenant? What would be the application to all of them?
Mr. Chair, Senator Ortman, I don't believe anyone has qualified yet. There was a delay in the implementation of the Rural Preserves program, so no one has entered into that program at this point.
So, Mr. Chair and Ms. Olaf, so what about all the folks that are getting Green Acres treatment now?
Senator Ortman, this extension is for the Rural Preserve program, which nobody's signed up for yet.
Right. So there are no covenants in place at this point is my argument, my question.
I believe that's correct.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair,
anything else, Senator Olsen?
I'm hoping my next bill will go a lot easier.
Any questions, members? Anybody else? Anybody want to speak in opposition to this bill? Mr. Kua.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Steve Kuha. I'm the Cass County Assessor. I'm here to represent the Minnesota Association of Assessing Officers as its legislative committee chair. And I'm not here to speak in opposition. So just wanted to point that out. But on behalf of our organization, we do have some concerns. We just want to go on the record. And hopefully in some future discussions, we'll be able to help and assist be resources to you and to the author to maybe address some of the concerns that we have. And many of those concerns have already been spoken to today. Excuse me. And that being the removal of the 10-year commitment and the covenant is an issue. Valuation issues of how we would arrive at values are still up in the air a little bit, and there has to be some discussions with the University of Minnesota folks and whatnot to find out where those numbers should be. But just wanted to briefly identify for the record that we have an interest in this. We want to be party to any solutions if we can, and just voice some concerns about ironing out some of the wrinkles.
Thank you. Questions, members? Okay, Chair's going to lay Senate File 2731 over for possible inclusion. Thank you, Senator Olsen. And Senator Olsen, 2732, maybe a proposal that will address some of that data that was presented on Senator Fulby's chart about the 30% property tax increases for eggs.
Mr. Chair,
Senator Olsen.
Mr. Chair, members, on Senate File 2732, our change is at 1.13, where the rate multiplier goes from 0.5 to 0.45. So what that effectively does will, on real or agricultural property under $1 million, it will drop it, 0.05%. But that multiplies out with the green acres value and all that stuff. It should help address some of the concerns we've been talking today about these values on these lands. And there is a fiscal note there, because there is some impact, because it is a shift that there will be some increase in home properties, and the fiscal note shows it about tax incentives or refunds. I believe it's $460,000 per year, fiscal note.
In the 2012-2013 and going forward years.
That's correct, Mr. Chair.
Okay. Do you want to bring your testifiers up, Mr. Senator Olsen, and then we'll
this
go
one,
forward from
Mr.
there?
Mr. Chair, pretty much is just me, because this
just
is
you?
Kind of
okay.
Who's going to argue with this
on
one? We'll see.
Mr. Chair, Fran Muren. I'm a Washington County dairy and crop farmer, also a member of Farm Bureau. Chris Raddatz apologizes for having to leave for other duties, but he asked that I speak in his behalf and on behalf of the Farm Bureau, which supports Senate File 2732. Property taxes have risen dramatically in the area, and particularly for pay 2010, and this would provide property tax relief to farmers.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Questions, Senator Dibble?
Thanks, Mr. Chair. I mean, just so we're mindful of the fact that net taxes on homesteads would increase by $6.1 million. The available relief corresponding in property tax refunds, you know, if we continue to fund the PTR program, and there's questions about whether or not we have the wherewithal to do that and some of our others, is only $460,000. So we just need to be cognizant of the effect on all the other property taxpayers in a given jurisdiction and around the state of making a change like this.
Yeah, and Senator Dibble, anytime we make changes in rates, it affects other properties in the jurisdiction. And we had a pretty good, pretty thorough discussion earlier about some of the shifts that have occurred the last couple years off of homes onto ag land. So we're taking a look to see if whether we need to have a little longer-term remedy to some of that. Senator Olsen?
Mr. Chair, I just wanted to mention that, interestingly enough, there's about 4,200, just under 4,300 parcels that are in the second tier, so over 1,010,000. So just approximately just under 500,000 parcels would be in the first tier. So,
questions, members? Sure.
Mr. Chairman, I did bring my own property tax statements along just to demonstrate the impact. But on this particular parcel, we're from pay 2009 to 2010, we're seeing 114.3% increase. This one receives 155.5% increase. This one is 173% increase. This one is 420% increase. This one is 72.6% increase. So that's what we're experiencing out in the rural area on our farms for pay 2010.
Yes. Thank you. Anybody else want to testify? Seeing no questions and no further testimony, Senator Olsen, we are going to also lay Senate File 2732 over for possible inclusion. And before we go on, I had some discussions. I don't know if Senator Fulby is still in the room. I think, members, Senator Fulby's bill on the date extension, Senate File 2745, we need to move that to the full committee. And I don't see she's here, but I think Senator Dibble moves that Senate File 2745 be recommended to pass and referred to the Tax Committee. Any discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Motion prevails. Bill's passed. Thank you, members. And we'll have to notify Senator Fulby that her bill's in the full committee now.
Mr. Chair, if I may.
Senator Olsen.
Before you lay this over, one thing to address. Yeah. Senator Dibble's concerns about the tax shift. This is truly a local tax. I've had to explain to numerous audiences that the state doesn't have a dog in this fight. We're establishing the rate, and the counties assess that for their local property taxes. So it's true that it is a shift, but it's within the counties. So, you know, primarily the agricultural counties will see the shift more than although there's farmland in Hennepin County.
Senator Dibble.
Thanks, Ms. Chair. And don't misunderstand me, Senator Olsen. Like with Senator Fobey's bill, you know, I'm sympathetic. You know, and the chart that she presented was very compelling. It's 38% increase. I mean, it's extraordinary. So I understand what's going on. We just need to always remember that there's no free property tax classification change. It's always a shift, and other folks pick that up. And something that sometimes I don't think we on the property tax and the tax committee ever forget, because it's drilled into us. But we need to surface and voice that, you know, so that folks are aware that, you know, when we're changing classifications and changing rates, that's, you know, squeezing balloons. We just need to be mindful of that in terms of setting public policy.
And Senator Olsen, I think I already have laid this over, but I just want to say that as the local governments have had to continue or increase their reliance on local property tax, as the proposals to reduce aids to them reduced, that puts additional pressure on the property tax system. And so we see increases across all classifications. And at the state level, our trigger that can have a positive impact by reducing property taxes is in our aids and credits area, and that would be local government aid, county program aid, et cetera. And so as we see proposals to reduce those, that'll put further pressure to have increases in property taxes. So while we're struggling this year with deficits, et cetera, you know, in the future, we're going to have to reestablish this partnership between local governments and the state in order to have not have these continual increases and pressures on property taxes. And so I've already laid Senate File 2732 over for possible inclusion. So thank you, Senator Olsen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members.
Senator Erickson Ropes.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, committee
welcome
members.
Welcome to the committee, Senator Erickson Ropes.
Thank you. First, I'd like to say thank you to Senator Olsen and Senator Fobey for the work they're doing on these rural tax issues. They're very much affecting owners and farmers in my area as well. And I'm co-authoring several of those bills, so I hope you think real favorably on them. And I appreciate you letting me sit in on the committee hearings this morning. I'm here today with a bill that should be a really good bill for you to consider, and it has to do with the special levies section of the tax statutes that you deal with. And I've been working for the last two interims on a County Service Veterans Officers Task Force, along with many members and stakeholders dealing with streamlining services from the CVSO offices to local veterans. And one of the recommendations from this working group, which included the Association of Minnesota Counties, the State Association for the County Service Veterans Officers, the Department of Veterans Affairs, who else am I forgetting?
Veterans organizations.
Oh, the veterans organizations, the Commander's Task Force, and legislators and the county
commissioners.
Oh, yes, right, the county commissioners. So it's a pretty broad group. They came up with a recommendation, which I have before you this morning, and that is to add the ability of counties to special levy funds to cover expenses and salaries related to the county service veterans officers. As you know, we already have a list of exceptions that will allow counties to special levy for emergency services, jails, police force, things like that. We would like to add salaries and expenses related to the county service veterans officers to that list as an option for local authorities to include on their special levy authority. And I have with me today Jim Golgert, who's with the Minnesota Association for County Service Veterans Officers.
Welcome to the committee, Mr. Golgert. Oh,
yes, Mr. Chairman. Good morning, Mr. Chairman, committee members. My name is Jim Golgert. I am the County Veteran Service Officer from LeSueur County, and I'm also the president of the Minnesota Association of County Veteran Service Officers. I appreciate this opportunity to testify before your committee. This Senate File 2270 comes about from the, as the Senator Erickson Ropes mentioned, the CVSO Legislative Work Group. Minnesota Statute 197.60 mandates counties to appoint a veteran service officer and shall provide necessary clerical help, office space, equipment, and supplies for the officer, together with reimbursement for mileage and other traveling expenses necessarily incurred in the performance of duties, and may appoint one or more assistant veteran service officers who shall have qualifications prescribed in Section 197.601. However, the statute does not provide a state funding source, but it does provide for a special levy to pay for these offices under Minnesota Statute 197.60, subsection 4. The CVSO legislative work group over the last 2 years have looked at that current statutes relating to the CVSO offices and took an interest in the Minnesota Statute 197.6, subsection 4, the tax levy. Minnesota Statute 197.6, subsection 4, tax levy states, in each county employing a veteran service officer, the county board may levy a tax annually sufficient to defray the estimated cost of all salaries and expenses necessarily incident to the performance by the veteran service officer of duties during the succeeding year, and to make up any deficiency in the fund raised for that purpose during the preceding year. The tax so levied may be levied in excess of and over and above all taxing limitations, including but not restricted to limitations based upon population or local tax rates. This specific section was added to the original 1945 statute sometime in 1949. It is our contention, the Minnesota Association of County Veteran Service Officers, that this statute could be utilized by counties to establish CVSO budgets under special levy authority and therefore exempt from the current levy limits. Minnesota Department of Revenue's position was that the Minnesota Statute 275.71, subsection 1, limits on levies, which states, notwithstanding any other provision of law or municipal charter to the contrary, which authorizes ad valerium, taxes in excess of limits established by sections 275.70 to 275.74, the provisions for which special levies and special assessments are made, takes precedent. And since CVSO offices are not specifically listed in Minnesota Statute 275.70 to 275.74, the special levy statute could not be legally honored by their agency. Our association requested through the legislative work group an opinion from the Minnesota Attorney General's office on this issue, as it has a statewide impact, but they referred us back to our 87 individual county attorneys. Senate File 2270 and companion bill, House File 2462, will amend Minnesota Statute 27570, subsection 5, to include the veteran service offices. Just to give you a little insight, the CVSOs are the government delivery arm of the benefits in the state of Minnesota. 93.9% of the VA benefit claims in Minnesota are represented by veteran service officers. And federal VA expenditures in the state of Minnesota for fiscal year 2008 were $1.48 billion. I will stop it there, Mr. Chairman, and ask if you have any questions.
Thank you. Let me just see if I can get to the nut of what the issue is. This is an effort to get around the levy limits because the counties can currently levy all this. It's just that they can't if they're trying to comply with the levy limits. Am I correct in that assumption?
Correct, Mr. Chairman.
And the levy limits expire next year?
I believe so, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Any questions, members? Senator Dibble.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. This is obviously a brilliant bill because I'm co-author on it. That being said, and I'm sorry if I missed it. I'd step out for just a second. Senator Hickson-Ropes, maybe you know, how much are we talking about, like, per county? What is the budget item of paying for a county veteran service officer and the average?
Thank you,
county?
Senator Dibble. I'll let
Senator Erickson-Ropes or Mr. Galgaard perhaps
Galgaard,
could be helpful.
Take that.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Dibble, with us today we have several other counties, and I'll just give you some examples. For my county itself, LeSueur County, would be my budget is roughly $150,000. I'm a relatively smaller county. Hennepin County's Veteran Service Officer Office budget is $750,000. Olmsted County is $252,000. Houston County is approximately $101,000. and Nicollet County is approximately $110,000. So if you take into consideration those budget items and the number of taxpayers within each individual county, the rate to the individual taxpayer would be very, very minimal, maybe anywhere from $1 to $10 over the year.
Mr. Gulgart, but those budgets are currently being levied by the county.
They are levied under, Mr. Chairman, they are levied under the county's general fund levy. Mm-hmm. This would just give another opportunity if the general levy are limited, would give a special levy limit. And it has been in law since 1949, but under the change in the special levies, it was not authorized any longer.
Okay, Senator Action-Ropes.
Mr. Chair, it allows counties another mechanism to ensure that veteran services are being provided to their local vets as they anticipate additional LGA cuts.
And there, Senator Action-Ropes, we both serve on the Ag and Veterans Affairs Committee, and that committee has done a lot of work for veterans and veteran services officers over the last number of years. So thank you for your work there. Any other questions, members?
Mr. Chair, I think it's just one of those, you know, and we see the list of special levies. You know, it's a judgment call. You know, it's a difficult dilemma because, you know, there are many things that services that counties deliver that are of high priority. But I know for Hennepin County, we have Milt Schoen here, provides outstanding service, delivers great value to our vets in Hennepin County. And I think, you know, I heard some of the testimony, some of the benefit, you know, in terms of federal resources that are put into the hands of vets more than pay for of this local property tax effort. So.
Thank you, Senator Diddle. Anybody else in the room want to testify in favor or of opposition? Seeing none, no more questions. Thank you, Senator Erickson-Ropes. We will lay Senate File 2270 over for possible inclusion. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you very much,
Mr. Chairman and members.
Good luck with your work. Senator Vandiver. And welcome to the committee, Senator Vandiver. Senate File 2685.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members of the Tax Committee, Senate File 2685 is intended to ensure the continuation of horse boarding facilities in Minnesota. A number of them have been classified as commercial, and this bill intends to clarify that interpretation and to do so while minimizing the property tax shift due to this classification and explaining the process in the bill. If I could, my witnesses, Allison here, will explain how we got to this point.
Thank you, Senator Vandiver.
Thank you.
Ms. Eklund.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the subcommittee. My name is Allison Eklund. I'm the I'm a Twin Cities attorney and the lobbyist for the Minnesota Horse Council. I'm here today with the president of the Horse Council, Mark Ward, and here next to me is Mr. Daniel Ramberg, who is a property owner. He has a horse boarding stable in Washington County, and it was Mr. Ramberg's initiative 18 years ago that obtained the statutory clause subject to amendment today. Senate File 2685 is it is consensus bipartisan legislation that resulted from a very productive year-long study with the Department of Revenue and stakeholders. We worked very collaboratively and very well with the Department of Revenue, the Association of Assessing Officers, as well as stakeholders from throughout the equestrian business community. This statute represents not so much of a policy change as much as it represents a synchronizing of the statute with Department of Revenue policy and recent case law. The Summerdorf decision came out of Sherburne County. The tax court held that pasture is an agricultural product that is sold to boarders under boarding contracts, and it held that horse training and riding instruction, per the testimony of Mr. Ramberg, is integral to horse boarding because of the safety issues and the welfare issues that are involved. One of the issues that we were very careful to address was the concern of the Association of Assessing Officers that we not at all expand the residential classification into agricultural homestead. That was not our goal. We very carefully avoided any language that might jeopardize that distinction. Likewise, we wanted to make sure that we did not overreach and try to classify truly commercial non-agricultural activities as agricultural. So we have careful language worked out word for word and approved by the Department of Revenue. It says that commercial boarding of horses may include related horse training and riding instruction if the boarding is done on property that also is used for raising pasture to graze horses or raising or cultivating other agricultural products as defined in Clause 1. So the Department of Revenue in its study has confirmed that it now believes the pasture can be and is an agricultural product produced for sale so long as there's at least 10 acres of it in production used to graze horses in a horse boarding business. And the horse training and riding instruction are services that may be provided only to boarders and not to the general public. We're not talking about rodeo or event barns. We're talking only about the business of horse boarding, which is a horse husbandry, a livestock husbandry business. It is a family farm business for many, many Minnesotans, and that is all that this law seeks to accomplish, and I think that we've done collectively a great job of collaborating on this process. I'm happy to take any questions.
Thank you, Ms. Eklund. And Senator Vandiver, let's get testimony from Mr. Ramberg and the other folks here first.
Certainly.
Did they have anything to add to the discussion?
Senator Scully, I think this is a clarification problem more than anything else, and that's because the assessors that have gone out there chose to go off track and make it a commercial endeavor instead of what it is, and which is simply agricultural boarding of horses.
Thank you, Mr. Ramberg. State your name for the record.
I'm
please.
Mark Ward, with the Minnesota president of the Minnesota Horse Council, and I believe that this bill will simplify the tax code for horse properties in a way that our members in the Minnesota Horse Council will appreciate.
Thank you. Any questions, members? Mr. Hagan, would you like to add to this discussion, please?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is John Hagan. I'm with the Minnesota Department of Revenue, and we're supportive of this legislation. We basically believe it clarifies the position we've embraced, partly as a result of the discussions we had in preparation of the horse boarding report, as we're required to do by the legislature. And we sort of look at pasturing of livestock, and in this specific instance where you where people pay money to have the horse boarded there, that that's a component of that would be the expectation that they feed the horses. And if they feed them on pasture that they grow, or if they feed them on hay that they buy, we believe that's an agricultural component. So we're comfortable with this.
And, Mr. Hagan, do you feel this will bring us into conformity with that court decision that Ms. Eklund has referred to?
Mr. Chairman, I believe it does. This our decision to do this was it. I think it preceded the court decision, but it seems to be founded and well-founded in logic. And we were in a position before where to go over it real rapidly. If a property owner had what we did is we held on the literal definition of agricultural purposes, which required a product for sale to be produced by the farmer. And if they didn't produce a product for sale, we hung on the literal interpretation and said that was not agricultural in some instances, which means the property owner could have 10 acres, cut hay off it, feed it to their own cattle or livestock, and it would not be agricultural by that definition. If they sold it to their neighbor and then in turn bought hay from somebody else, that would be agricultural. So that seemed like kind of a ridiculous conclusion to come to, and logic seemed to prevail that if it was the same hay in the same use and it was being used for in conjunction with an agricultural for agricultural purposes that that it made better sense. So I believe the very long answer to your short question is it would bring us into compliance with that.
And, Mr. Hagan, I have one more question. Are assessors going to have difficulty, or is it just going to make it easier for them to draw their lines between the commercial aspects and the agriculture aspects of these enterprises?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, it's hard to say. I think there will still be some issues of contention occasionally, and in some of our conversations we had with the Horse Boarding Council, Ms. Eklund in particular, and Mr. Ramberg, I think we all agreed that some of the more commercial aspects of the horse boarding, some of the tack shops, things like that, weren't agricultural, and we just thought that this is not an expansion. I think you'll still have occasional disagreements between assessors and property owners of if a tack shop or a more commercial rodeo-type operation is commercial or not, but I think it is a step in towards clarifying the issues that we've encountered.
So the intent here, then maybe Senator Vanderveer, but the intent here is that if they are doing commercial activity like tack sales, rodeo stuff, et cetera, that's commercial. It's the boarding and the pasturing that then would be the agriculture portion of this. And I seeing heads nodding.
That's
Ms. Eklund, perhaps you'd want to say that on the record, please.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Only the commercial boarding of horses and the pasturing of horses and those activities that are integral to horse boarding, which means those services that are offered to horse boarders or in connection with the horse boarding, are considered to be part of an agricultural operation, an agricultural business and use of land. And any kind of services that bring in or involve services for hire to the general public would not be considered part of this agricultural business.
Senator Vanderveer.
And Mr. Chair, I do believe the assessors wanted us to clarify another aspect of this, and they might want to come up quickly to make sure there's no misunderstanding regarding trails. I don't know if they're still here.
Sure.
Thank you, Senator. Good morning. My name is Bill Efforts. I'm the Assistant Hennepin County Assessor, and I'm here on behalf of the Minnesota Association of Assessing Officers. Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. I did also get to serve on that report, on that horse boarding study report, and I think this does provide some clarity, but I just wanted to make sure that it doesn't lead to some unintended consequences for assessors as far as trail riding on 2B lands, or if there's some of that activity that's going on 2B lands, and make sure that would not be included in our previously discerned land between 2A and 2B. I just think that's the intention. I think it's been stated for the record here, and that was our main concern with overly expanding this classification.
Thank you. Senator Vanderveer.
And, Mr. Chair, that is our intent, that if the boarding is done on property that is also used for raising pasture to graze horses or cultivating other agricultural products as defined in Clause 1, in other words, on the property that is used to raise or cultivate just the agricultural property. So if you were on a trail adjacent to the property in the woods, the fact that you were riding horses on there would not make that, would not meet the requirements that we have here.
Thank you. Senator Dibble.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. Just to be clear, I wasn't clear from the discussion. The 10-acre threshold does not have to be met, if I'm correct, because of, we're talking about cultivating agriculture. I'm looking at paragraph F, which says real estate of less than 10 acres used exclusively or intensively for cultivating agricultural products. So does that mean that the 10-acre threshold does not need to be met?
Senator Dibble, I think it has to meet the 10 acres in order to get the ag classification, but maybe Ms. Zoff can help us.
Mr. Chair, Senator Dibble, that's correct. This kind of property would have to be at least 10 acres.
Oh, it does. Okay. Mm-hmm. And then just a question for
Senator Dibble,
the folks in the horse industry. Are there any of these facilities, commercial boarding horse farms that don't have pastures to graze horses?
Senator Dibble, there was a great deal of discussion in the Department of Revenue study group meetings with stakeholders about the great variety and breadth of services and business models within the horse industry. There is, however, a very typical horse boarding stable operation. Horse boarding, according to the dictionary definition of boarding, involves the feeding of a horse for pay. And just as in the old-fashioned term, room and board means shelter and food, boarding in the horse world generally means that one property owner is feeding a horse that belongs to another property owner. There are variations on that, but that is the foundation of what horse boarding means, and it is the way in which people in the city, like me, can own horses out in the country where Mr. Ramberg lives.
Thank you. Any other questions? Anybody else want to testify? Anybody want to testify in opposition to the bill? Seeing none, thank you, Senator Vandeveer. I know you've worked hard on this horse issue, and I'm glad you got everybody kind of on board and tapped back into the box, because I thought it might get more controversial than it turned out to be. So thank you. Chair Lays, Senate File 2685 over.
And thank you for your help, Mr. Chair, on this.
Thank you.
Welcome to the committee, Senator Scoy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. I'm here with Senate File 2656. This is a bill that increases the watershed district's limit for what they can borrow. And this is becoming more and more of an issue as watershed districts are working on flood damage reduction initiatives, where they have to, prior to the projects moving forward, purchase the land or make arrangements for the land that the flood damage reduction projects are going to go on. And so I'm bringing this bill forward, and I think I'll turn this over to Mr. Harnack to explain in greater detail. I just want to mention, and I know Mr. Harnack's not going to like me for this, but I'm not exactly sure that the number is the number that we're going to want to head to, but I think we can look at that as we move forward, and maybe Mr. Harnack will have some information for the committee about the need for the increase from $600,000 to $2
million. Mr. Harnack.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, my name is Ron Harnack with the Red River Watershed Management Board. And this is a bill that has been through the Minnesota Association of Watershed Districts resolution process and is a high priority on their list. Ray Bone, their executive director, is here and also can support it. I also have John Rauschlein. He's with the administrator of the Bois de Sioux River Watershed District and one of the watershed districts that would find great use in this increased borrowing authority. I'm going to speak about it in terms of the Red River Valley in particular. We've seen land values that have increased from about $900 per acre to in excess of $3,000 per acre over the last several years. In the past, the Red River Watershed Management Board, which does have a levy across the Red River Basin, has been able to underwrite a lot of this land acquisition up front. However, with the aggressive efforts of the watershed districts in the valley, those dollars have been expended on putting projects on the ground, the flood storage projects. So now we're in a position where we're having a difficult time in acquiring the land. Our projects amount to anywhere between 400 acres to about 1,500 acres. And when you look at $3,000 per acre, it doesn't take long to spend the kind of dollars that we're talking about. We do, in the end, look to the Flood Damage Reduction Program, which is in the bonding bill, for reimbursement of our overall project costs. However, in order to get to that point, the watershed districts are required to get the interest in the land first. And if we don't get the interest in the land, when landowners are willing to sell, projects can either be delayed or not be implemented at all. So this borrowing authority is really critical for us to have the capacity to be able to acquire these lands so that we can actually move forward as aggressively as we have in the past with putting our flood storage projects on the ground. We don't have the capacity to underwrite it at the Red River Watershed Management Board any longer. There is no state program that can assist us in acquiring this land up front. We have to get the lands tied up, and then ultimately, once the project proceeds, we have the ability to provide for some degree of reimbursement to the districts. We do not see any tax increase, property tax increase associated with this. The watershed districts will use their existing levy authorities to retire the debt. We'll get some reimbursement and grants from the FDR program, as well as cost share from the Red River Watershed Management Board under their existing levy authorities. So we really feel it's critical to have this increased borrowing authority if we're going to be aggressive in dealing with the flood storage issues in the Red River Valley. We can't continue to just build dikes and dikes and more dikes to protect existing facilities in the floodplain. We got to complement that with flood storage that holds the water where it lands. Otherwise, we're never going to get on top of the flood problems that we have in the Red River Valley. So appreciate the committee's support and Senator Scully bringing this forward for us. And we'll stand for any questions that the committee may have.
Mr. Harnack, the revenue note is a little bit contrast to your testimony. It says that it does anticipate additional levies to pay for, you know, additional loans, loan dollars that have to be repaid.
And, Mr. Chairman, I have talked with Eric Ouellette this morning about that, and my understanding that there will be some further discussion with the committee staff, but it's our feeling, as they better understand the levy limits and constraints of the watershed districts, that this will not have an impact on the property taxes as they suggest.
Well, can you help me understand that a little better? Is that because you're looking to the state bonding resources for repayment, or?
Mr. Chairman.
Because it's logical conclusion. Right. That they
it's
have
because we are, the watershed districts have an existing levy authority. And most, if not all, the watershed districts are at their cap. So we're not asking for any additional levy authority for the watershed districts. We're asking for the ability for them to borrow more, and they will use their existing levy capacity to pay off that debt over time. Part of it will be paid back through the grants we get through the Flood Damage Reduction Program. Part of it will be paid back through the Red River Watershed Management Board's current levy. And the balance then will be paid for by the individual watershed districts through their current general levy or their construction levy, which is already at their caps.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Scoy.
The way I understand this, and we're going to have some continued discussions about the watershed district levy authority, is that instead of borrowing $600 in year 5, 10, and 15, they're going to borrow $2 million, and so the net impact would be comparable.
So it's really about how we amortize these.
But it doesn't cover this. Oh.
How we pull down the money and then amortize it over time to come in within the existing levy and bond resources that we have.
Right. And Mr. Chair,
it's still not adding up to me.
The districts will use their existing levy capacity, mm-hmm. not increasing their levy capacity, their existing levy capacity, which is already at a cap.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so they can't go any higher. Mm-hmm. All they will be doing is using that existing levy and paying off that debt over a longer period of time as they borrow more.
So the answer to my question is yes, I believe. So we can move on. We'll have more to conversation about this so I can understand it better. Mr. Rochlein?
Sagan.
I was calling him Mr. Rochlein.
Mr. Chairman, John Rochlein, I'm the administrator of the Boydessu Watershed District. I'm here if you had any questions related specifically to district operations and can support those.
All right. Thank you. All right. Any questions, members?
Anything further, Senator Skoy?
No, thank you, Mr. Chair, and I think we'd just lay this over for
inclusion. Okay. So Senate File 2656 is laid over for possible inclusion.
And I think we're done. So.
And with that, nothing else to come before the committee. We are adjourned. Thank you.
Thank you. Thanks, Rod. Yep.